Hello, and welcome to the Autism Annex, the STAR podcast. I'm your host, John Andrew Slominski, and it is my distinct privilege to bring you a look into the world of autism support, education, and advocacy. On today's episode, we have an insider's perspective on the world of STAR autism support. My four guests will share their insights into what makes STAR tick, and why it has become such a successful curriculum for students with autism and other developmental disabilities. If you're listening for the first time in our first episode, welcome, and thank you for joining us. If you found us through our archives as the podcast develops, thank you for searching us out. We hope for this podcast to become a resource touchstone for anyone interested in autism and other developmental disabilities. Today's episode examines the origins of STAR as a support for children with autism, its current and developing initiatives, and the ways in which STAR has pivoted during the pandemic. Thank you for joining us. I'm particularly grateful to four guests for joining me on today's episode: Joel Eric, Sarah Pennington, Ryan Mead, and Amy Dierman all represent different corners, pillars, if you will, of the STAR organization. Joel, let's start with you. You have been a pioneer in the field of autism research. Could you introduce yourself to us and tell us a bit about what you do at STAR?
I'm Joel Eric. I am Professor Emeritus at Portland State University, and I am one of the co-founders of STAR Autism Support.
Joel, you began work some 40 years ago in the field of autism research, and you and David Krug have had a very close working relationship. How did your collaborations first come about?
So Dave Krug is a colleague of mine from Portland State University. Actually, back in 1972, he was one of my professors at Portland State University. And we piloted the first program for children with autism in Oregon together in 1973, 74, 75. And Dave and I kind of helped shape some of the pieces of the STAR program. He's also a co-author of the STAR program. And in the early days of the ORPATS project, which got started in 1983, Dave was involved with that, doing assessments of children and providing reports on their progress and that kind of thing.
So early in your career, you helped develop the Autism Instrument for Educational Planning. How did that happen to bring you in contact with Ivar Lovas?
Dave Krug and I, and another person, her name was Patricia Almond, developed an assessment tool called the Autism Screening Instrument for Educational Planning. It's still used today to help identify children with autism and monitor their progress. And at the time that we developed it, it was one of the first instruments of its kind. And we were asked to come to UCLA and share information about it and do kind of a research seminar about our autism screening instrument. And at that time, I met Ivar Lovas. He was doing what he called behavior modification at that time. Today, it's called discrete trial training. And he was working with children with autism in his clinic at UCLA. We observed him, talked with him, and developed a relationship. We asked him to come to Portland State and see what we were doing with our kids at our center at Portland State University. He came and met us there. And over time, we started working together, learning from each other, doing workshops together throughout the country on our program and what Ivar was doing. I learned a lot from Dr. Lovas on how to implement discrete trial training, a little bit about the different levels of kids and how each type of child needs something a little bit different and how to offer that to the kids. Ivar learned from us about assessment, about broadening beyond discrete trial training to some other methods that are now considered evidence-based practices, like functional routines and teaching spontaneous language skills.
Now, research-based and evidence-based are terms that we frequently hear around curricula for students with autism, but what do those terms mean? In other words, what's the difference between something that is research-based and something that is evidence-based?
That's a good question, and one that we like to explain to folks because there is quite a bit of difference there. The evidence-based practices have been established by the National Autism Center through their report called the National Standards Report, and also by another federal agency called the National Professional Development Center. Those two agencies have examined the research over the last 20, 30 years and identified practices that they felt developed appropriate outcomes for kids with autism. And those are these evidence-based strategies that you can use with kids with autism, like discrete trial training, pillow response training, functional routines, visual schedules, and various behavioral methods. And the strategies are very important, but with each of those strategies, you could teach almost anything. And then the key is to teach the right thing. And so when we developed the STAR program and our other curriculum, like the LINCS curriculum and our themes first, theme units, we wanted to develop content that was appropriate for kids at various levels and actually led to something. So the content is just as important as the strategies. And through research, you can validate the content. And so our STAR curriculum has been researched several different times by different universities and different program, different research studies. And those research studies not only evaluated the strategies, but also the content of what we are presenting to the kids and showed that the kids are making progress and that it leads to something and an effective, appropriate outcome for kids. So the evidence-based practices or the strategies, the research base is a research study done on your curriculum that includes both the strategies and the content.
So how has research validated the STAR curriculum? Have there been any interesting findings?
Mm-hmm. You know, lately we've heard a lot about randomized controlled trial studies because of the pandemic, and a lot about those studies are being done in order to validate a vaccine that we're using, and they're talking about how effective the vaccine is and all. And the STAR curriculum has actually had two different randomized controlled trial studies done on it, and both of those studies found that the kids made significant progress over the children in the control groups. So that's a good indication of research-based practices and how that's validating the curriculum itself.
Joel, you've worked in the field of special education for decades now. How did you get started? I mean, what initially propelled you to this lifelong interest?
Well, there were two things that kind of drove me into this field. The first one was that my sister was deaf, totally deaf, and also had some emotional problems. And so I grew up with my sister, and a lot of people weren't able to communicate with her or understand what she was saying, but I always was able to be the person kind of being able to facilitate things and communicate and understand her verbal skills. And I learned a lot from her about how to work with people who have disabilities or other issues. And some of her emotional problems were such that we had to do some kind of behavioral training and things like that to help her cope with society. And that kind of steered me a little bit in that direction, and that I was really interested then in how people learn. And so the second thing was I really was interested in how children learn new skills and how we can make things easier for children to learn. And so when I got into my undergraduate work in psychology, I heard about autism and I heard about the work that Ivar Lobos was doing. And I thought that was very interesting. And I met Dr. Dave Krug at Portland State, and we formed the first program for kids with autism in Oregon. And we had those kids in a center, and I really had this goal of trying to teach specific skills to the kids and learn how they learn. And you really have to put yourself into the child's place. You have to think, what is it that the child is thinking when these things are happening, when someone's trying to teach them something, what is it the child's thinking? And using that perspective, I was able to come up with strategies that I think help the kids learn. And I did a couple of research studies on how learning occurs with kids with autism, and they were both published. And those research studies help push me forward even more into developing a curriculum and skills and methods for teaching kids with autism. So that's how I got into it. And ever since that very beginning in 1973, working with kids with autism, that's where my focus has been. And I've worked direct trying to do develop curriculum and support materials for the kids.
Thank you, Joel, for sharing both your professional and personal investment in working with children with disabilities. We turn now to Sarah Pennington, who is instrumental in working with schools on the district level. Sarah, thank you for being here. Tell us who you are and what you do at STAR.
My name is Sarah Pennington, and I am the National Accounts Manager for STAR Autism Support. What that means is, I just work really closely with school districts to make sure that they have the curriculum materials that they need to be able to implement those evidence-based strategies. I'm organizing training and just making sure everyone has what they need to get going.
Sarah, you work both internally with staff and trainers, of course, as well as with administrators of large districts. What concerns do you find that all of these folks share?
The main concern, I think, is just making sure that we provide a certain level of support to everyone. So what we like to do and what we see works really well is getting inside the school district, providing some training to everyone who's going to have access to the curriculum or is working with those students, and then focusing on a few classrooms to sort of create model training sites and train people inside the district to be able to train others and implement with fidelity. So I think that one of the concerns we always see is even though we're focusing on a subset of classrooms, maybe to build that capacity, administrators really want to make sure all of their staff members have support, and we have lots of ways to be able to do that.
So one of the many issues that public schools face, of course, and we've had this conversation before, is building capacity internally to make a curriculum consistent.
Yes. And we want to make it replicable. We definitely, in the school system, there's a lot of turnover. So we don't want it to be something where one person has this knowledge, they leave the district, and then they're kind of stuck not being able to continue with implementation. And really that hinders the students' progress. So what we like to do is make something really replicable. And the type of training that we do is so hands-on that if we're working in a classroom and we think that that classroom might be a model site, we might be working with a teacher, but then also there could be a speech pathologist or a coach level person that could then help teach other classrooms and support other classrooms. So what we're doing is we're helping the teacher implement, and then we're simultaneously helping that coach role sort of be developed, and we're going through our fidelity checklist that way. So we're really making sure that kind of whatever they're doing as far as implementation or whatever their role is, they're supported and they know how to continue when we're not there.
So let's say someone is interested in the sort of broad strokes of the STAR curriculum. How would you demonstrate that for them?
What I like to do is if there's time and the administrator is willing to sort of have an admin team meet with me, I can demo the curriculum. And so what I like to do is show them all the resources that are available. So there's that multi-level support. We have resources for the classroom, obviously, that are online, really just ready for teachers to print off and use. We have the STAR Online Learning System, which is for remote learning. So we really have something for everyone. And once I show administrators that, they automatically think, oh, okay, this classroom could use this, these people could use that. So it ends up being a really cool way to see the curriculum and the resources firsthand. And then also, talk about how it could be implemented in the district.
So, in researching this podcast episode, I discovered some feedback from a teacher recently that one of their students found that a character in the curriculum looked exactly like them. Is this something that STAR does intentionally?
So much of our curriculum, I think, is, based on modeling. So the students are looking at these visual strips, looking at visuals that are, they can model the behavior, they model the actions. And so it's really cool when a student is able to see themselves in the visuals.
Thank you so much, Sarah, for joining us today. Speaking of visuals, we're joined now by Ryan Mead, who heads the STAR Graphic Design Department. Welcome, Ryan, and tell us a bit about yourself and your role at STAR, if you would.
So my name is Ryan Mead. Originally, I was brought on to just help with the monthly curriculum, to do the illustrations and things like that. And then it's sort of as the team and the company has grown, I have taken on more of a management, graphic design, kind of overseer type role of the entire department.
So Ryan, where did you first find an interest in working with children, or for that matter, people with special needs or developmental disabilities?
Growing up, my dad was actually a special education teacher. And so I had that sort of connection. I did a lot of stuff. He was a basketball coach as well. So I was always involved in like the Special Olympics growing up and kind of stuff like that. And then I've always been drawn to sort of the, I guess you could call it like a younger style of design, as far as like, I really like to design things for kids. That's always just been something I gravitate towards, whether it's, you know, screen printing, which I did a little bit of, or it's just design that's intended for a younger audience. That's just something that has come more naturally and something that I've always kind of gone towards.
Now, you mentioned that you're drawn to a design sort of concept that's intended for a younger audience. Of course, any designer has to consider their audience, right? So how are your designs impacted by the fact that many of the users of your work are children with autism?
One thing that kind of comes to mind off the top of my head is just this idea of symbols and symbology that for me, I mean, it's easy to think, okay, an arrow means whatever this arrow is pointing at, that's what you're focusing on. That seems simple enough. But when we're focusing or talking about kids with autism or people with autism, there can be sort of a disconnect in that symbol. And it may be, oh, the arrow is red, so that's the most important thing. This image must be talking about an arrow or something like that. Or just things like that where color theory and things that I had always kind of known as being the norm, I guess, going in not designing for this population has sort of shifted in my mind a little bit, if that kind of makes sense.
I've learned that in the last year or so, STAR has taken a very close look at diversity, equity, and inclusion, both inside and outside the company. Now, how is this changed the shape of the character library that graphic designers like yourself quite literally draw from?
So we, like a lot of other companies, we have sort of taken a look at ourselves and thinking about the products that we're putting out, is this actually representative of not only the people that we're serving, but the people that we can be serving as well. So we started work in a committee that has been pretty much, I guess, the last at least 6 months, and taking a look at specifically focusing on the curriculum that we're producing. This is the part that I'm kind of involved in. So you kind of touched on this library, but it's basically a way for us to semi-streamline kind of the characters that we reuse, and making sure that as we're doing that, we're actually creating characters that look like the kids and the caregivers and the parents, not just creating kind of what comes maybe our first thought or what might come natural based on our background and experience. So really taking a look into that and sort of making sure that we are being inclusive and we are being representative of people that would be using this curriculum. The second part of that is we had Maria, who is part of Autism in Black, which is a company that we worked directly with. She did some training, she did some workshops, she did a bunch of stuff with us, as well as providing like feedback on the curriculum that we have already created and sort of telling us, oh, this is kind of what you're doing, this is what you're doing well, this is what can be worked on, and gave us really specific things to sort of target. So one thing that she had talked about was really interesting. It was like kind of a diversity tool, if you want to call it that. But the idea was we create something that is very specific to us. And she sort of gave us a starting point and then told us to go from there, obviously.
Of course, it's very easy to point to the difficulties that we've all encountered in the pandemic, but have there been any side benefits from your perspective to working and facilitating teaching remotely?
Yeah, I think that one specific example that's an easy one is this sort of introduction of SOLS, which is this online remote learning system that we had to create just to give teachers a chance and have something to use as soon as they were basically told, hey, schools are not open anymore. You have to teach these kids. And there wasn't really an easy solution. And there, I don't think there still is, but I think we were able to provide that. And alongside of that, by doing that, we had to work with a lot more people at the company that we just hadn't really worked with before. And so by working directly with them, I think that for me personally, I've been able to sort of understand the effects of little design choices that I make, like what those could mean, because we're working with trainers who are directly working with the kids, directly working with the teachers, the caregivers. And we just didn't really have that direct line before. And I think this has really opened that up, which is, I can't, like you're saying, it's kind of unique to think that this is a, if you want to call it a positive thing, but it really has been to sort of like understanding and better collaborating as a team.
So do you ever get feedback on your work from children or teachers or families?
Within the last week, Amy came to us and said, hey, we just got this back from a teacher. And the kids specifically talked about how they were so excited that someone looked like them, which is just such a positive thing to hear back. And it's just showing that just these little changes over time are going to start creating and making that impact and making and helping kids feel more included and actually represented in a real way. So yeah, that was amazing.
Ryan, thank you so much. I really appreciate you sharing the creative side of STAR with us today. So much of what STAR does pivots on the work performed by trainers, and Amy Dierman spearheads much of that work. Amy, would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, everyone. My name is Amy Dierman, and my role at STAR Autism Support is the assistant director of professional development. And within that role, I also provide training and support to districts around the United States and sometimes around different places around the world. I also support the trainers in learning how to provide similar trainings to lots of different school districts virtually and in person.
Amy, you've been a big advocate for diversity, equity, and inclusion at STAR. And Ryan in graphic design tells us that you've been in touch about some feedback you've gotten recently.
Yeah, it's really neat to see. And I was able to sit in on a couple of meetings with the creative team and listen to them talk about some different ways that they can change the graphic images to be inclusive for our students. And they've started adding those to some of our new tools. And I was actually working with a teacher a couple of weeks ago who pointed out that one of her students said, like, that boy looks like me. And it was really, really an impressive moment because this teacher didn't know that our company had been working really hard on this. And so it was really, that's all the feedback I think we needed to know that we're doing this for all the right reasons.
Now, your background is as a speech-language pathologist, right? How did that translate into working with children with autism?
Yeah, so I started as a speech-language pathologist, and I always had a heavy interest in working with students with autism, so I was always really intrigued by how they learned and I knew that they learned in different ways, but I wanted to learn more about what was the best way to teach them and how can I really understand what their behaviors are trying to communicate to us. And really, when I started understanding the strategies in the STAR program, I started really, it just put the pieces together for me that while I was trying to help this child learn how to communicate, there were a lot of other things that I had to learn about the student. And one of the things that I was really intrigued by was their behaviors. And so in the STAR program, a lot of the strategies that we use are behavioral-based teaching strategies, and I never really learned about that in graduate school or in any of my undergraduate courses. I never knew what this ABA thing was or what applied behavior analysis had to do with what I did as a speech therapist. And I learned very quickly that if we don't try to help students learn new behaviors, then we can't try to replace their challenging behaviors, which could sometimes be that they're not able to communicate. And so they show us that in different ways. I saw that those behavior strategies were very important in the groups that I was running with my students. And if I was able to reinforce the behaviors that I liked, the desired behaviors, I was actually able to teach them how to communicate better.
Amy, your training work has taken you all over the world. Have any trips or events been particularly memorable or fulfilling?
Several places within the United States that I've been able to see teachers start in the very beginning and then grow into coaches in their own districts. So being able to see them not only meet the needs of students in their own classrooms, but help other teachers learn.
Well, of course, the pandemic of 2020 and now of 2021 has affected us all. So how did you clear this hurdle that, you know, really none of us could have seen coming?
We decided very quickly that we needed to change some of the ways that we were going to help our teachers. We're used to going into the classrooms and we're used to providing workshops in person. And so right away we thought, well, we'll just try doing these workshops virtually and see how we can meet teachers' needs. We thought maybe it was going to be a short time during the pandemic. And so we were able to quickly flip our workshops into a virtual format and provide the teachers with even some hands-on experience where they could practice the strategies virtually and work in small groups with other teachers that were going through this same experience. I think those virtual workshops made it easy for us to reach teachers where they were, whether they were in their homes or they were still in their schools. We were able to chunk some of the workshop time so that the adult learners didn't have to sit for very long periods of time. And then we were also able to provide them with tools through SOLS, our STAR online learning system, that they could actually use with their students virtually, providing them with just easy to use materials that didn't require a lot of prep time, so they could meet the students in their home and work with their caregivers. I think one of the main benefits we've seen is that we've been able to meet with the caregivers more and find out what challenges they are facing and then help the teachers to modify the goals and objectives to be met in the home. So if the parent is working on a toileting routine, the teacher can actually help the parent by pre-teaching some of those skills in the virtual session and give them some ideas on how to help the student during the routine. And the caregivers are actually able to learn some of these strategies while the child is learning during virtual sessions, because the teacher is having to coach the caregiver to either use reinforcement with the student or maybe modify the way they're giving directions. And so I think a lot of our caregivers have seen, like, wow, I didn't know that my child could do that, or I never thought he would want to play this game with his sibling. So we're able to really help them in ways that we weren't able to when they were in the classroom.
So it sounds as though, despite difficult circumstances, you've been able to harness the power of technology to reach kids, teachers, and caregivers in as many ways as possible. Thank you, Amy, for spending time with us today. And now to close, a final note from Joel Eric, who insisted on sharing his gratitude.
There's one other thing I'd really like to say is we wouldn't have been as effective as we are without the staff and the trainers and the autism specialists that are part of our company. Every single one of them has added true value to what we do and really made a difference in kids' lives. And all of these folks that we started adding to our company or started working with us came about because they had the same interest and excitement that we had about working with kids with autism.
Thank you, Joel. And thanks to you for listening to the Autism Annex, the STAR podcast. The Autism Annex was developed by STAR Autism Support. Katya Merjan works behind the scenes. Sheila McGee provides consultation. And Melba is this episode's animal mascot. I'm John Andrew Slominski. Until next time, take good care of yourself and one another.